Hey, it's Bubba Wallace from 2311 Racing. You know what it feels like forever? Sitting on a plane waiting for takeoff. Good thing I've got Chumba Casino. With daily boosts and social casino games on tap, this is the kind of fun that makes time fly. Why not turbocharge your downtime? Play now at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello, and welcome to the Inside of Views podcast for December the 23rd, 2022. This is episode number 142. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
On today's show, we'll be talking about the reveal of the deeply refreshed Hyundai Kona Electric, the Treasury Department delays implementing rules governing EV rebates, and the Buick Electra E5 has debuted officially in China. I'm Dominic Ioni, Inside EV's forum moderator and Inside EV's editor. Joining us today is the assiduous Tom Malogny, senior editor at Inside EV's and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have our main man, Mr. Martin Lee, from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor joins us from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Autospec Studios, where he produces a high voltage videos for a growing number of YouTube channels. All right. Welcome, everybody. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
How's it? Guys. So we're all in the Martin is not. Three of us are in the U.S. right now, and we're all in like a deep freeze or about to become a deep freeze. So, Kyle, how's it doing over there right now? Starting to warm up?
Yeah, I think we're going to start warming up the last couple nights. It's been incredibly cold, which has been great for making videos. So we filmed a bunch nonstop. The last couple of days, pretty much different tests and experiments. Been a blast.
You were up all night, actually, tonight. You just had like a little nap, right?
Yep. Yeah, exactly. Because
this is crazy.
We got down to minus 21, minus 22 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 30 Celsius. And we were doing heat pump versus resistive heating Model 3 race. We let them cold soak. I left my Tesla at the supercharger for 2 days, not parked at the supercharger. And then drove it over and plugged it in to see what would happen. Uh-huh. And as you can imagine, it wouldn't charge, but it eventually did. Okay. And that'll be a video coming. So many fun little experiments like that. It was great.
When you say it wouldn't charge, what do you mean? So what's the process? You plug it in, does it trickle charges, it preheats the battery? How much does it take when you first plug it in?
Yeah, so the Model 3 can burn 7 kilowatts of waste heat from the electric motor. So you get 3.5 kilowatt rear motor, 3.5 kilowatt front. So a total of 7 kilowatt goes to heating the system. And that's exactly how much it pulls from the supercharger.
Right.
Until it can start accepting a tiny bit of extra power to the battery.
Wow. Okay. So that's just preheating. That's purely energy to get the battery up to a temperature where it can accept a decent rate of charge.
That's correct. Yep. Right. So it can go for an hour if it's really cold before it starts charging. So we'll see. Yeah, we'll see how it goes. But the video will be up this week, and I think that one will do really well. It was really fascinating.
Wow. Yeah, I enjoy watching Bjørn Nyland's videos, obviously, and he's in Norway where it does get cold, but I think he's so used to it. He almost doesn't explain to, and you know, none of us are beginners, but he almost doesn't kind of take you all the way back to the steps of being like, well, this car is doing this because of the temperature, because he's so used to it now. So it's fascinating that now that you've had minus 20 degrees where you are, you can kind of bring a fresh take to that and make some videos and explainers of this is what happens to lithium-ion batteries at these temperatures. And actually, not just the battery, but all the other bits that go to charging a car as well. So I'm looking forward to seeing those.
Yeah, just as an example, I'm using my Model S for an experiment. It's not on winter tires, so I couldn't drive it. But I let it cold soak for 24 hours, plugged it into a wall outlet just to see what would happen. I don't know the results because I haven't looked yet, but everything's being logged. So lots of fun stuff to see if that car will even charge. I don't know. I don't think it has been. We'll see.
How do you log those temperatures? Is that what's the software you use or the app?
Yeah, so for the Tesla stuff, I use Teslify, which is just I think it's like $5 a month or something like that. And it just pulls all the data from the cars. It's great.
Wow, okay.
Hey, so let's see. Let's kick this show off, I guess, but let's talk about what we've been driving this week, and then we'll get to the news. So, Tom, Last week, we talked about your review of the Grizzly E Duo, and I just wanted to mention that the review is up on Inside EVs now. And again, this is like a home wall unit that can charge two cars at once. So I understand that you have another home charging unit review coming up. So before we talk about your big video of the week, I thought you could just tell us about what unit it is and what when the video will be up.
Yeah, so this week's review is the Topdon Pulse Q with the Christmas lights on it behind.
Okay.
Haven't finished. Did it come with the Christmas lights?
Look at those.
No, but it does flash like Christmas lights when you do the I test them for automatic restart when you have a power failure. So one of the things I noticed, I'll give you guys a little tip on this review coming up. It's the first unit that I charged in that I tested in a while that the automatic restart didn't work. And power outage, you know, it's supposed to restart. Some of the units take up to a minute to actually to start charging the car again. But I tried it with my R1T and it didn't work. And then I started thinking, well, maybe it's communication with the R1T specifically. So I pulled my Lightning in the garage. It didn't work. And then it just so happened, one of my friends pulled up with a, Pete, Kyle, you know, Pete. Pete pulled up to my house with his Model 3. And I said, you know, while you're here, let me see if this works on a Model 3. So we plugged this Model 3 in, shut the breaker off. Same thing. Will not. Automatic restart doesn't work. That's a big fail. Because if you get a temporary power outage, I mean, even if your power flickers overnight while it's charging for a second or two, this thing's going to shut off. All the lights start going, kind of like the Christmas lights, you know, the Wi-Fi signal, the charge signal, everything's going crazy. And then it won't start charging again. So it's going to take a hit when I give it my ratings. But that review is going to be out probably maybe right after Christmas.
Okay.
It's a pretty good unit otherwise, though. It has some pretty good features, but, you know, it only takes a couple major flaws like that to make it hard to recommend, you know. And it's their first shot out of the box, this company Topdon. They already make equipment that charges, like trickle charges, 12-volt batteries. They have a lot of battery chargers out there. So they've been charging batteries for a while. You know, I think with a couple of tweaks, this could be a good unit, but you know, full review will be up on State of Charge and also on Inside EVs probably right around Christmas.
I tend to presume with most modern EVSC, they'll kind of play nicely with your solar systems and PV systems. But a charger like that wouldn't, because you want to use the excess energy that you're generating from your roof to charge the car. And then when there's none, you know, you're boiling the kettle or something or making a coffee and it's all going to the house, then it goes back to the car. But I guess that's not designed to work that way if it's going to cut off every time there's an interruption. So yeah. I presume most new chargers play nicely with solar stuff. So that wouldn't, though, I guess.
Yeah, no, it wouldn't. And honestly, at least here in the States, it could be different with some of the equipment you have over there, Mark. Most of the new units don't do what you just described, where they will intelligently prioritize power from your solar array. There are some that do. And sometimes you have to buy additional equipment to make that happen.
Right on. Hey, so with much of the country in or about to be in the severe cold snap, it's going to get down to like -7 Celsius here. I think that's like 20 degrees Fahrenheit. I'm in North Florida. So with the whole country kind of being in a deep freeze, both you, Tom, and Kyle did a video about electric vehicles in the winter, like this past week. So I guess it makes sense to start there. So, Tom, your video is specifically about the Ford F-150 Lightning and range anxiety in winter. And you were joined on it by Darren Palmer, who is the vice president of global EV programs at Ford Motor Company, as well as Jeff Head, a F-150 Lightning owner in Alaska. Mm-hmm. So your video is about 45 longs, and we don't need to go over the whole thing, but maybe start with Ford's cold weather recommendations at the like 6-minute 5-second mark on that video, and then you can hit us with some of the highlights.
Okay. Yeah, no, funny. Yeah, it's a long video, as I tend to do quite often. That probably hurts my YouTube views. And funny thing is, I just noticed a comment this morning. You know, I have 8 cold weather driving tips, and one person said, Jesus, 6 minutes for each tip. I can't stay here that long. So, yeah, it's one of my shortcomings, but some of my followers like the long videos. So what I did was Ford put out this video on recommendations for the Lightning and cold weather driving and how to maximize range. Now, most of these tips pretty much all of them could be applied to any EV, you know. So, but you know, you people do search, you know, electric vehicle. I mean, Ford F-150 Lightning. And I did this specifically for that because I brought Darren in, and Ford also offered me to the opportunity to talk to their one of their customers that lives up in Alaska, who's been driving pickup trucks his whole life. He's owned a whole bunch of Ford F-150s. The interesting thing about what I talked about Jeff with was, you know, he said that the Lightning has been the best all-wheel drive system that he's ever had on any of his pickup trucks. He said, you know, basically said, I don't really understand what Ford did so differently about this, but I also have a, you know, F-150 Platinum or whatever, you know, for that's like 2 years old. And he said that this actually is the best. Maybe it's the combination of the weight. He said that it's heavier than the other vehicles, but or the fact that the all-wheel drive system just can work quicker to stop slippage. But he said I've driven every truck that they've made, and this is the best truck that I've ever had in snow and ice and cold weather. So that was interesting from him. Darren gave me a couple of things that we learned that we're going to be having some new updates. They're going to be pushing out OTA updates soon. Okay. And I also kind of pressed him about why Ford didn't put the a heat pump in the Lightning. And, right. You know, his answer was that, you know, they did some tests and, you know, the current heat pump technology, you know, the cost to benefit trade-off for this particular vehicle, the Lightning, didn't seem like it was worth it for them. So what they are doing is they're working on new heat pump technology, something that's, you know, better than what is currently available or what they currently could have put in the Lightning. And that's going to be an option in the future on Ford electric vehicles. So evidently Ford's working on, in Darren's words, a more advanced heat pump system that's more efficient, more effective in a wider range of temperatures, because, you know, heat pump systems don't always work. They're not always great in every situation. There's advantages and disadvantages having them. So it's not like, you know, oh, put a heat pump in the car, you're guaranteed in no matter what conditions to go further. So in any event, that's what I got from Darren. And, you know, I talked about the things that Ford recommends. Some of the biggest things, as Kyle knows, and I think Kyle talked about them in his video, you know, is keep the vehicle plugged in, precondition, set your scheduled charging so that it's finishing up when you're getting ready to go. Check your tire pressure. That's enormous. You know, so many people that I know, I get my friends' cars, and I see they got like the tire pressure warning on. I'm like, dude, you know, the winter, you gotta pump your tires up. And, you know, the vehicle handles better, it's safer. And if it's an electric vehicle, you can add 10 or 15 miles of range if your tires are like 3 or 4 pounds low. And they'll drop 3 or 4 pounds in the winter in an area New Jersey, where you're going from, you know, 80, 90 degrees down to 20 degrees. You know, you could lose 3, 4, 5 pounds per tire, and that could cut 10 or 15, even 20 miles of range off. So you do all these little things that up. There's no one thing that you can do to make your EV go further in the winter. You just do everything right. You keep it plugged in, you precondition, you maybe use the heated seats and the heated steering wheel a little bit more. You don't have to shut off the cabin heat, but you can knock it down a little bit and use a little bit less cabin heat. All that stuff, you're getting 3 miles here, 5 miles here, 8 miles here, 10 miles here. All of a sudden you've got, you know, 30 or 40 more miles. And one of the things that the easiest thing for anyone to do is just drive a little bit slower. And in the winter, that's safer anyway. If you're in a cold weather area, there's black ice out there. You can be going 70, 80 miles an hour and just hit a patch of ice, especially in these conditions that Kyle's, you know, experiencing now, where it's so cold. So, you know, you don't have to get there 3 minutes earlier. You know, knock 5 or 10 miles an hour off your highway speed. And, you know, you're going to add 20 or 30 miles of range, and, you know, you're still going to get to your destination. So those are the bones of the video.
Okay. Sounds like a good watch. I think I watched most of it. Did John Head have any like Alaska specific kind of type of cold recommendations?
Not really. That was one of the interesting things I talked to him about. You know, this is his first EV, and he's only been driving it for a couple months in the winter. So I think even Jeff has some things to learn about how to, you know, maximize his range and all that. He really was more excited and more talking about how competent the Lightning was in extreme ice and snow and slush and things like that. That was what he was most impressed about was that the fact that he goes, I couldn't believe it, that this is, it's better than any of the other trucks that I've ever driven in the snow. So.
Right on. Oh, that's, so you said driving dynamics, it just like grips and it, you know, wheel controls better and all that.
And he tows all the time too. He's got boats and everything. So, I mean, you know, I mean, he doesn't tow 600 miles up mountains, but you know, I talked to him a little bit about that. Like he goes fishing and he's got a you know, a, not a huge boat, but a big enough boat where he tows it to the lake and tows it back. So, you know, the electric vehicles are challenged with towing. We know this, but it depends on what type of towing. There's plenty of people. There's plenty of types of towing that it's just fine for, you know, interstate towing of, you know,
cross country,
five tons, you know, I probably wouldn't get the lightning for that, you know, but just towing small things here and there, it can do it as well as, you know, any combustion vehicle can.
Right. Hey, so Goldfish had an interesting comment to pull that back up. So what does keeping it plugged in do if it's not charging?
So the lightning will also, and most EVs will do this, if the battery gets to a critical temperature, it'll automatically turn on the battery heating system and continue to keep the battery warm in addition to keeping it charged. Okay. So, and then if you are going to precondition, you want it plugged in so that when it, the preconditioning turns on, it's not pulling energy from the battery. It's the cabin and the battery's warming up off the, you know, the grid. I mean, it is pulling it technically from the battery, but it's getting replenished from the where it's plugged in.
And if any Hyundai Kona owners, experts know, it's got a thing called winter mode, and it's you tick the box in the setup, and it says it will diminish your range, but it will maintain battery charging performance. That's fantastic. And so I turned it on recently when it was -6 degrees Celsius last week, which is 21 degrees Fahrenheit, and activated it and made sure that I was in, I left it in eco mode, I think. I tend to poodle around an eco plus. Either way, it was in normal or eco. And for the life of me, I couldn't get the, when you look at the Kona will display what is taking a share of energy. So whether it's the drivetrain, the HVAC, the et cetera, the electrical system. And it's got a section for battery management, and it just wouldn't budge from 0 kilowatt hours. And I thought, well, how much colder has it got to get from -6 or 21 for it to activate? Or maybe I'm doing it wrong because I was in eco mode, and it didn't really matter because I wasn't going to be DC fast charging. I was just playing.
It has to be a lot colder,
really, because the last Kona I had, I didn't have it through a winter, and so we've just bought a Kona again, and this is the first time I've had one in the cold. And I thought, well, how much colder? So it like that's not enough then.
It's like critically cold. I don't know what it is, but I've never been able to get it to activate. It's the same with Ioniq 5, same with EV6 here. They don't work unless you're in a deep freeze, which, man, I should have tested that the last couple of days because I've never actually seen it do anything.
I mean, no, it just sits there on zero. So I'm like, okay, well, I might just have to try and, you know, go up to Norway or something and just try and get my car to do something. Or whether it's just not, I don't know, not a thing. No, it should be. I've got the ultimate spec, which I don't know what it is in your lineup. Yeah, but I've got the top one, right? So it should be fine. And it's a 21 plate, so it's, what's that, 18 months old. I think they came with heat pumps. I don't even know, to be honest with you. It's
just to, I think, keep the battery to the point where it can still regen a little bit. And so you probably still had regenerative braking, maybe not the full bit. But I think it's like once you have no regen and it's a total ice cube, then it runs a little bit of heating, but it's different than the new ones, which have preconditioning.
Right.
Those will actively heat the battery pack too, warmer than ambient by a lot.
Oh, okay.
For fast charging.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, we get a week of cold weather a year and a week of hot weather a year, and this country grinds to a halt. And apart from that, we're fine. So we don't really get extremes, but it'd be interesting if we ever do get another cold snap, you know, after Christmas. I'll keep an eye on it.
So, Kyle, one thing I
want to point out quickly, since Martin was talking about where it gives you the different breakdowns, the interesting thing that Ford did, and I talked about this in the video, was they give you in the infotainment screen a breakdown that also includes exterior temperature, which is unusual. You don't get that too often on electric vehicles. They break down, you know, for propulsion, for climate use, for accessories. And usually when you see the climate breakdown, that includes everything, like what you lost from you know, the exterior temperature and even the systems that are warming the battery. But they break it down, and it's kind of to help people understand where your range went. And I thought that I thought that was interesting. That and it's significant now. Like when I get in my truck in the morning now, I'll look and it'll say, you know, 18% was lost today because of the fact that it's 10 degrees out or 20%. So I think that's I'm an advocate for having the vehicles help tell the give feedback to the drivers, because everybody's so new with this stuff. I mean, everybody's not the four of us, and they don't understand. Well, why is it doesn't it go as far? I think that kind of helps them understand, okay, because it's so cold, you lost 20% of your range. And then, you know, 65% to propulsion, 4% went to your accessories, and then climatization, you lost another 12%. I'm sure that didn't add up to 100, but you get my point.
Right, okay. That's interesting.
Nice. EV Rob has a nice comment here. Heat pumps can work in the cold. It's 8 degrees Fahrenheit, minus 14 Celsius here in Detroit, and my air source heat pump is keeping the house nice and toasty at 72 Fahrenheit, 22 degrees Celsius. No heat strips, resistance, backup installed. That's pretty cool.
That was one of the things that I was totally unprepared for, because I work here at the – this is a – my garage is converted, but it's a single-story flat roof building. So the top, before I covered this whole flat roof in extra solar panels, it's a felt, dark felt. So in the summer months, June to September, it gets stinking hot in here, 32 degrees Celsius, and it's just too hot to work. It's just a heat soak, the dark roof. Having the panels on, I don't think it made any difference last summer. Either way, a couple of years ago, we put air conditioning out here. Now, we don't have air conditioning in British homes. It would be pointless. It would just be, HVAC would be a waste of time. But because this is where I work 5 days a week, we did put a heat pump air conditioner out here. And when I bought it, I knew it was a heat pump air conditioner that would also heat. I thought, that's nice. And then the first winter that we had, even last week when it's been, say, minus six, it's been so warm out here. And that's a revelation to me, for anyone that doesn't know that. And I didn't know that, air conditioners, actually, some air conditioners also do have a heating function with a heat pump in them. And it's so crazy efficient, because we have the panels and the battery and stuff, so we keep an eye on these things. And it's so crazy efficient compared to how I used to heat this room in the winter, whether it was electric radiators. I tried an infrared panel once. I got it out here to throw it away. But like this is like an infrared, a little picture on the front. These things are meant to be like magical, I don't know, far infrared heater. Honestly, it didn't work for me. It was just really, really expensive to run and didn't generate any heat. But the air conditioner, brilliant. So yeah,
I know BMW was working on infrared heating for the cabins of their EVs. I don't know if they still are, but
yeah.
Hey, so Kyle, on your cold weather video, you took a little slightly different tack. So your video is called "Here's How to Protect Your EV in Extremely Cold Temperatures," and it's more about what you can do to protect your battery pack. And so I think it's worth repeating here too what you say near the beginning of the video. All of the mass production vehicles that are out there have been tested at vehicles way colder than what we're experiencing this week. So what are your main tips for taking care of your battery in cold weather?
Yeah, I don't really think there's anything major you can do to damage your car. I say that as I just bricked my Leaf. So maybe there are things you can do to damage your car, which we had to pull it away from the charging station with the Rivian. I had to hook up a strap and drag it out of the parking lot because, yeah, things not happy. So I'm hoping it actually warms up enough for it to spike some life into that car. That's for a different story. So you can do bad things to your car, but generally the way people use their electric cars, they're fine. There's so many safeguards in these cars. Certainly, you know, Tom's video is much more on how to actually improve your day-to-day life with the vehicle. That's more useful to the end user. Here's how to get more range. Here's how to get, you know, blah, blah, blah. Mine's like, okay, if it's minus 40 outside, probably plug it into a level 2 station. Don't let it go below 40% state of charge or so, because you get so much less usable capacity so quickly when batteries cool down. You know, basically keep in mind DC fast charging is going to be slow as molasses when it's like that, especially if you have a car that doesn't have on-route battery preconditioning. Volkswagen ID4 is a great example. I pulled up to the EA station yesterday. There was an ID4 charging at about 25 kilowatts. And, you know, that's just all it can do. There's, you know, the car had, I would talk to the owner briefly, but the car had no output power. It had no regen. They couldn't even drive it hard if they wanted to. They were a viewer. They knew what to do. And the car was just an ice cube. So there are some situations where you just can't, you know, really warm up your car without lighting a fire underneath it, which I really don't recommend doing.
Yeah, don't do that.
Yeah, it's really just a quick video. It was more just to calm everyone down because I got a lot of messages, especially from people here in Colorado. Hey, this is colder than we're used to seeing. Right. You know, do I need to like put my car inside? What do I need to do? And basically the video is like, just don't worry about it. And yeah, I mean, as long as they're not, you're not asking anything of them, they can get really cold. It's as soon as you try to start charging them when they're really cold that some weird things can happen.
In general, what Kyle says is 100% right. They can get cold. It that won't really damage your battery. What will damage your battery is extreme heat. So, you know, the extreme cold, the vehicle might not be usable. It might not turn on. It might not charge. But you're not, the battery, the vehicle shouldn't be damaged. You know, if you take it the opposite way and you know, put you bake the thing at 150 degrees Fahrenheit for 12 hours, you know, that's bad stuff happened to your battery when it gets too hot. But when it's cold, once it thaws out, it comes back. I mean, I remember people used to recommend putting your batteries in the refrigerator, you know, all the time to make them last longer. I don't know if that ever worked, but when I was a kid, my parents used to buy a pack of batteries and put it in the refrigerator. So it didn't hurt them. I know that.
That rings a bell, actually.
But, interesting. Yeah. So, the reduction of capacity comes back, you know, and we did plenty of videos, I think, educational videos over the last couple of days that will really help people.
Right. And so basically, you know, I think you were saying just like, you know, if you have a garage, keep it in your garage, leave it plugged in.
That's more for a user experience thing, right? That's not going to elongate your battery's longevity. That's just really going to make it so, oh, okay, maybe if we left our e-tron outside and cold soaked and ran the heater, it might get 120 miles on a full charge versus 170 miles on a full charge if we put it in the garage, something like that.
Right. And you had some handy tips, like, you know, leave it charging, like Tom said, until you're ready to leave and have the climate set. And so you didn't get in, you can heat warm up the thing with the grid energy instead of, you know, what you've saved up in the battery.
Sure.
Now, pull that comment up that Nick Nordic just posted about. New study saying cold temperature damages, take a comet low temp. Now, did that study say that just the cold itself damages the battery, or you know, driving it hard when the battery is cold damages the battery? Because that's two different things.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure the noise that I have been hearing is yo-yoing the car, ripping on it as hard as you can when it's stone cold. Obviously, doesn't sound great for it, and it's proving to actually not be great for it. And so that's why in my video, you know, look, if you really need to get somewhere, degradation should be the last thing on your mind as the owner. Just drive the car and do what you need to do. I'll be the first one to yo-yo to the charging station to get some faster charging speeds. But if you don't have to do it and you can just hit on-route battery preconditioning and let the thing take care of it, that's a nicer way to get there, and it's nicer for your car.
And that's the best thing, what Kyle just said. Don't worry about it. I think we like micromanage and study every little thing, and we talk about degradation here. And the fact of the matter is, most people – The battery is going to degrade a certain way, you know, over the course of its lifestyle. And what you can do is going to affect it slightly. I mean, unless you do things that are egregious, you know, egregiously bad. So just enjoy your electric vehicle. Just drive it. Follow best practices, like just the simple things. But don't overanalyze every little thing to do, because it really takes the fun out of owning an EV. You know, the batteries are going to degrade. And as long as you don't do things that are really stupid with them, you're probably not going to have that big of an effect on the overall degradation.
Right on. So, Kyle, besides cold EVs, you also put a video out about DC fast charging in the cold. So you visited some Electrify America locations as well as EVgo and ChargePoint. Some results were not great.
Yeah, I think sadly that's the case. Also, Tesla superchargers you can add to the mix as well. You know, I guess the what started this all was I was gearing up for all of the tests I wanted to do when it was cold. So you'll see in this little photo, I have two Leafs stuffed behind the charging station. And I was just bringing them over there because I know they have the Chatamo station there. And, I thought that would be an interesting place to conduct some tests, go in the middle of the night when no other EV drivers are around. Let's see what happens when we plug in two frozen Leafs. I had the oldest battery pack and the newest battery pack. So the two ends of the Leaf structure. And I thought, okay, well, we need to cover less expensive cars from time to time. I think we should do it more. And so let's see if my, $3,000 Leaf can hold a candle to the, $38,000 new one. And what actually happened when we got there was just seeing a line of EVs and a little bit of chaoticness and everyone running around plugs. And I'm like, what's going on here? Just a few months ago, actually only about 12 weeks ago, Electrify America removed all of the ABB chargers from our location, except for one, and put in three new BTC units. These are the newer Electrify America charging stations. And to be totally transparent, they've been wonderful. Big power. We've gotten the biggest charging speeds, over 360 kilowatts on these things. They just pump the juice really good. Now, little bugs here and there. It's a new product. I think that's to be expected. Sure. But what we experienced when we got there was not a single one of them actually working at all. And they were all popping up with the same fault, which was an isolation timeout, which means you basically – part of CCS protocol is all of these little tests and checks before the charging process starts. And the isolation check is basically to make sure, you basically put pack voltage through the line and a very tiny amount of current, of course, and you see if there's any leakage throughout the system. You make sure that everything's, totally safe, so you don't touch the side of the car and get zapped similar, which is very, very rare. But these chargers kept failing this isolation test. And so, we're really lucky is when we show up to these stations, especially in our area, a lot of people watch our videos, which is truly incredible. And so, that means I can get in there. We're trying to figure out what's going on. They're like, Kyle, have you ever seen this? I'm like, I've never heard of this. What's going on? And, there was a Nero EV, an Uber or Lyft driver that we see quite often at this station who we know. There was a Polestar 2 as well. And then there was me. And so none of us could get these stations to activate at all. So that left us in Northern Colorado with one very older ABB unit all the way on the left that functioned. All three of those new ones, we couldn't get any cars to charge. Damn. So I went there. I said, okay, well, we should make a video. Let's go test this. I thought maybe it's a fluke. We'll give it a couple hours. I'll come back. And I brought the Rivian back and couldn't get any of their brand new units to charge there. And the reason I'm really more so concerned about the units rather than our particular station being down is these are the units that Electrify America has chosen to install around the country. This is what they said should be the next generation hardware. What really they instilled in me when I spoke to them last was they directly co-developed this hardware with BTC Power in our case, or SK Signet, which is the other hardware provider. They said we were with them every step of the way. We spec'd what we wanted. And, so in my eyes, okay, well, now they've just moved from purchasing hardware to actually specing and designing hardware. And I remember making a joke to a friend back then, like, wow, that sounds like a worst case scenario if Electrify America's specing hardware. This is not going to go well. But that was more just a joke in passing. I mean, ultimately, we really wanted this stuff to work well. And I would say in general, in temperate climates, it has worked very well for us. We've noticed certain issues where it's bricked my Rivian by sending weird power signals, things that can be, change through software, nothing dire, I would say. Right. I said, okay, well, let's see if it's not just my station. We got to go make sure it's not something going on in Loveland, Colorado. We have to go to others. And so I went down to Denver to another station that have these exact units, all five of them, the same issue, which took entire station offline. And you could see reports on plug share of other users indicating the same. One that stuck out to me was an Audi e-tron owner, a Volkswagen Group product charging on a Volkswagen Group charging company, who had to get a hotel because he couldn't actually charge at that location. And at that particular one, the ABB unit has been offline for a while. So there was no backup at that spot. So I thought, okay, well, it's really cold. Let's not harp on the new units too much. Let's go around and see if everything else is broken. Because if it's a thing where all DC chargers don't work in the cold, we can't really put the blame on one new hardware. And well, it's not like it was even that cold out. I think it was minus 10 degrees Fahrenheit, something like that. Reasonable temperatures for much of the north.
Sure.
But I went on a trek. So I went to every DC fast charger I could find, all the different models. I went to EVgo's Delta 100 kilowatt unit. I went to their 350 kilowatt unit. I went to their Signet 350 kilowatt unit. All of those worked perfectly. Now, some of them derated power slightly in the cold because either the cable cooling fluid actually can't flow that well in that cold, so you can't run hard current for a long time. But those are reasonable limitations of the hardware. I was still getting, 100 kilowatts to the truck, which is not me freezing in a parking lot. So that was okay with me. I went to ChargePoint, their CPE 250s that were installed everywhere, booted up instantly, full power, which was great. Their ChargePoint Express did not work, actually. So that's their brand new unit from ChargePoint, non-functioning. However, a little bit too early to blame on cold temperature, because I don't know if anyone's ever tried to charge a Rivian on one before. It could just be an interoperability situation. So I didn't put too much pressure on that, especially as there's only three or four installed in the country right now. But that's something I'm going to keep an eye on and play around with a little bit more. And also went to other Electrify America stations, which worked in the cold. We know their Signet units, not their new ones, but their older Signet units now, that worked. Their unit, of course, worked. So it really narrowed down to this new hardware, and sorry to go on about it, but it really narrowed down that the new hardware that's, supposedly going to become the ubiquitous, that's what we're going to find when we go to Electrify America,
right?
Doesn't work in the cold.
That's hopefully they figure out what's triggering this and can fix it without, opening up every freaking cabinet and, replacing a part or whatever,
That's the real shame here is really, by this point, what's funny is YouTube recommended a video I did, I think 4 years ago now, where I took a Kona EV on like my first ever Electrify America road trip. And the story hasn't changed. It's been different issues, different station activations for years. And it's just gone on far too long, in my opinion. It's really a true shame. And the sad part is that obviously these chargers hadn't been tested properly. Because if they had been thoroughly tested, we wouldn't be running into these issues. And again, that is speculation, but how could that be? Now, I just want to mention a couple more things. I also went on PlugShare and looked at other stations in cold areas with this hardware, similar things. Everyone's like, all the new ones are down, and I have to use that one old one at the station that they left. Also looked in warm weather states, because one of my thoughts was, hey, maybe it's just they're all down. Maybe it has nothing to do with the cold. Maybe they just all don't work. But hadn't seen any indication where the cold blast hadn't hit yet that anyone's having any problems with these. So that's as good as I can get. I made the video on it. And I hope it's not the video I want to make, obviously, right? We all want EVs to work. But I genuinely cannot recommend a CCS vehicle for long distance travel in the U.S. at this time. For daily driving, sure. For the occasional trip, if you like a little adventure, sure. But it's just like buy a Tesla or buy a gas car, in my opinion, to do the long trips where you have to rely on infrastructure until a competing organization puts in their own, long distance network like EA has done. They've really done a great job of building out a network. So many things they get so right. And unfortunately, just not designing hardware.
Right.
Well, let's hope they do learn from this. Maybe it's there's a critical part that's failing in this cold temperatures. Maybe it's a bad sensor. You talked about, the sensors that are sensing, it's kind of like, a new car. When a new car comes out and then 6 months into the new release, the manufacturer realized there's something that they've tested the hell out of, but it doesn't work. And let's hope at least, Kyle, because, as you said, they've done a great job getting these locations out there, getting the hardware, building out a network. If we have to go back and say, let's wait for a competitor to repeat that, it's going to take a while. So this is very you know, it's unfortunate to hear, but hopefully,
yeah, I'm sure it's a simple fix, right?
Hopefully that's the case.
It can't be a complicated fix. Yeah. It's got to be an easy one. But even then, the fact that this hardware went in cold weather areas where it's known to get this cold without proper testing is like big red flag. Yeah. What's funny is I posted this on LinkedIn, and actually the guy who used to run testing for DC equipment at ChargePoint mentioned a lot of the tests that they do. And I thought that was a really interesting thread. And he's like, I don't know of anyone else in the business doing this X type of testing. And again, this is all anecdotal, what I just read from his thing. And it was like really basic stuff. And I'm like, are you saying like no one just like deep freezes this stuff and tries to like crash into it and do like, where is the DC fast charging, you know, R&D and testing department like automakers have when a car launches?
Right. There must be.
Carl, in one of your videos, you were saying like Volkswagen in Chattanooga, they have a room where they put a car, keep a car running in like minus 60 degrees or whatever.
Yep.
That's crazy. But then we don't have anything like this for fast charging.
They must be.
Okay. Yeah. It must be. There's all sorts of things. There's like what was it called? Barometric chambers where they change the pressure. There's, you know, any very standard product development for something like this. It's going to be hot weather tested, cold weather tested. And as James, I showed a comment from James, Norway is the world's most advanced EV market. 9 out of 10 new cars have a plug socket on. 8 out of 10 new cars are pure BEVs. And the temperatures there are down to minus 18, minus 25, minus, you know, 30 Celsius at times. And there is a wealth of real world experience in EVs charging in very, very cold temperatures. So what I find frustrating is that in some ways the US is very much ahead of other countries, and in other ways the US is catching up, in terms of EVs as well, and charging networks compared to some parts of Europe, the US is still playing a little bit of catch-up. And it's really frustrating that actually one of the things you can do when you play catch-up is get it right. One of the examples that I'm always reminded of is many African countries didn't have landlines in their houses because they couldn't put the infrastructure in. But then mobile networks were invented, and everyone, or many people in African nations, went from having no ability to call somebody in your home straight to cell phone, right? They just kind of skipped out landlines because the technology was there. And so that I'm always reminded of that. And actually, if you're going to be a little bit behind somewhere else, if the US, it really frustrates me, because if the US is a little bit behind, I think it is in charging networks, you can leapfrog everyone. You can learn from these other countries and just get it right. And I'm watching Kyle's videos this week and his Twitter and his social media feeds, and it's massive. And I'm, you know, it doesn't affect me. I don't live there, but it's massively frustrating for EV drivers to have these problems when they've all been solved elsewhere in other cold temperatures. It's just ridiculous that we're having these situations occur with brand new hardware. Now, this isn't stuff that's been in the ground 5 or 8 or 10 years, which you would say, you know, if it's a 50 kilowatt charger that's 10 years old, you go, okay, well, look, this is, you know, we're on a very steep adoption curve with EVs. We're all learning as the, you know, as the time goes on. So I find it very frustrating to hear all these stories this week.
Yeah, I find it very discouraging. I really genuinely cannot recommend any CCS cars now, because I think we've all, me included, have lost confidence in any of the networks, really, but specifically any of the long distance networks other than Tesla at this time, which is really, it's just gone on too long. It's just 4 years of this. Right. And it's no change. It's the same response. And at the end of the day, like, you know, there's units out there. There's the technology is out there to make this work. There's the technology out there to communicate the story better, to share the hard work that's being done. We don't see any of it. I don't really care about it. I just want to show up to a charger and have it work. And the fact that it doesn't, well, yeah, bit of a shame. And I have to say, went to a Tesla supercharger in even colder temperatures, minus 20 degrees Fahrenheit, backed up, plugged in, full power, no drama. Yeah. And it's just like, okay, that was installed in 2016, the station I went to. And now we're dealing with station issues that are 12 weeks old. I went to another site, an EA site, that was a Signet site that has only 3 plugs, 2 out of 3 of them down. The one that was left working, only 1 plug out of 2 actually functioning. And this is what, a year old? Yeah. It's just too much. We need to stop installing infrastructure completely until we find units that can handle the extreme temperatures and give us the power requirements that we need.
And to follow up on that, we've had a lot of comments now of people saying it's time to switch to NACS. That's not going to solve this problem.
If
you swap the connectors on the stations, nothing happens. Right. So no, it's not. That's a totally different argument. Like, should we have one standard 100%? And do I like Tesla's connector better than CCS? 100%. I think it's a better, more elegant solution. It's easier to handle. It's not this big, clunky, heavy thing that when I go to DC fast charging stations, I hate when I watch sometimes older people, they're struggling to get it lined up and lock it in. The Tesla, you just grab it and put it in. It's a better connector. But that would not solve any of the problems that Kyle is talking about here. Just, you know, I'm so tired of hearing everybody when they see people complaining about EA stations not working, they're like, well, time to go to NACS. Guys, that doesn't solve the problem.
Sure. It's like superchargers with CCS in Europe work the same pretty much as version 3 superchargers here. If we start putting NACS connectors on other units here, they're going to work the same as those units do. It's really no different. Plus, NACS uses the same communication protocol as CCS for the most part. So it really is just a physical plug. It doesn't even dictate the cable size. My guess is the cable size would stay the same regardless, which even version 2 supercharging, I went to one just last night, and that was a pain to get in the car. I was two-handing this thing. They just get so frozen. I actually had to like have Alyssa help me get one of the Leafs charging on the CHAdeMO plug. There's honestly not much we can do about the cold weather cable stiffness issue. Yeah. That's just an unfortunate reality of high power charging at the moment.
And on the subject of infrastructure working, and I've banged this drum before and I'll bang it again today. And by the way, we've had plenty of infrastructure firms come on. Electrify America sponsored this podcast when we launched. They got us on the air, and they're a very kind supporter.
That was always really funny because we'd say, brought to you by Electrify America, which I always hated that we did a sponsorship with them. Well, and then secondly, I was like, oh, and here's all the stations that didn't work for me on this last road trip. Yeah.
And they never interfered with the editorial policy of what we did. They were very like, okay, well, look.
They weren't happy with it, but they
weren't happy. They never interfered. But the one time that they were like, oh, blimey, do we have to have that conversation airing our laundry in public was where I believe very strongly in regulation of essential things. And so, dangerous. I'll get political. It's got Elon Musk in trouble the last couple of months, but I will get political. I like to be left alone a lot in life. I'm like, don't regulate me. Don't tell me what to do. Let me get on with my life. But I do think certain things need regulation if it's essential. And so things like clean running water, a standard of living so that we're not poisoning our kids and our family. Clean running water, things like, just a standard of level of where we live in terms of services and increasingly infrastructure for EV charging. If we're going to move to EV at the pace that we are moving, as Kyle mentioned, there's a guy who had to get a hotel because he couldn't charge. He's not the first person to have done that, and he won't be the last. And if particularly the US government with the IRA is throwing a ton of public money at charging, I feel very strongly, I spent 20 years in the broadcasting industry, which here is very regulated. And so because, back in the old days when we had AM and FM radio, that bandwidth is finite. So if you were given a license to broadcast, we had a very, very strong regulator that would keep an eye on you. And so they would make sure that you are, because we had to have an agreement of what kind of music would play on each radio station. And we couldn't, like in the US, you can flip format overnight and you can, you got the license, you can do what you want with it. But over here, we couldn't do that. So if you said, right, we're a rock station, they'd tune in. Be like, you weren't playing enough rock music. So I am used to working in a very heavily regulated industry. I think there are huge benefits to working in a regulated industry. It keeps you sharp as well, by the way, because you can be fined. Ultimately, you could lose your license, and that sucks because you don't want to be the person that loses a license. And so we absolutely must have more central regulation of charging infrastructure, where if these companies don't adhere to a minimum standard, a minimum level, that or that there's a service level agreement, or the charges must be fixed within 6 hours or 12 hours, or have parts on the shelf to fix them, that their license to operate is taken away. And I really believe strongly in regulation of critical infrastructure, things like energy, keeping our homes connected to the electric grid, all those things. And it is a monopoly, right? So things like electric grids tend to be monopolies, tend to be regulated industries. So they're perhaps limited in how much profit they can make. But in return, they get a nice cushy regulate, sort of monopoly industry. It should be the same with charging infrastructure as well. And
you know what's interesting, Martin?
Oh, man.
The before we even get to the topic of regulation, I think it's how do you report when something's broken? Because all of these Electrify America stations, these new ones, specifically here in Loveland, and I know for sure in Colorado Mills, no one was able to charge on them, right? For at least a period of time, and I'm sure continuing into today. I went multiple times yesterday. I brought our e-tron. I brought our Rivian. We tried a whole bunch of cars, ID4. None of them could charge. They all show as perfectly available in the app. They're upline. They're online. They're ready.
Yeah, that's no good.
Inexcusable. Yeah. Inexcusable. Because if it's you are young, fit. You've got huge experience. If it's my wife and my baby at a charging station that needs to charge, I am going to be furious if a company says, hey, that charging station's working, and you turn up and it's not working. Now, what's the story with this week where you were live tweeting the stations you were going to, and then you start seeing the mouse moving around the screen or something? What's that story?
This is great. Yeah. So station uptime reporting, I think, yes, one side you can either, and maybe a bit of both, but government regulation needs to dictate how do you classify uptime? How does the charger even know that someone tried to plug into it if it doesn't recognize a car? That's a scenario. Okay, just as a point, I don't know how you can monitor all of these things, but it's a topic I'll get into later. The second point is automaker partnerships should really dictate station uptime. And the automakers should come to the charging companies with their own metrics that they want monitored so that their customers can feel comfortable going to these charging stations. And I really feel like the automakers very few of them know exactly what they're looking for in our EV drivers. Most of them are like, oh, let's do a $500 giveaway. And they have no idea what they're doing, in my opinion. So,
well, Kyle, sorry to interrupt you. Ford is attempting to do this. They have that, they call them charging angels, and their full-time job is to drive around and plug in and record the stations, and then they're crunching that data and they're going back to the charging networks and basically telling them we're removing your stations from our apps that direct our customers to go there because they're down more than 80% of the time or something like that. So at least some companies are trying to deal with this. But
I get that and I commend the effort, but from people that I've heard in the industry, it makes no difference is what I've heard on the back end. I don't even remember who, and multiple people have told me this. I don't remember who told me that, is that it genuinely is a waste of time. Now, I don't know if that's to be true. This is just the rumor. I'm just sharing someone else's opinion. I love that they're doing it. If anything, for publicity, I think it's awesome. Yeah. They at least recognize the issue. But Ford is a very unique company.
But if all the companies did it.
Yeah.
If all the companies did it and ganged Ford up on EVgo or Electrify America and said, we are literally removing your sites that are down more than 10% of the time from our app. So customers won't be able to find them unless they use your app, I mean, you got to walk before we run. And I think that's just wanted to point out that they have a full-time team of people that their full-time job is just to drive around the country and do what you're doing, but not tweet about it.
Oh, they get paid for it? They don't make free
tweets? I want this job. I could use this side hustle. Yeah.
I like it.
I don't get paid. Great. The one thing that always makes me laugh is when people are like, oh, well, you make money when the chargers don't work because you put out content. And it's like, well, not on Twitter. And that's where I normally like go crazy. Sure, on YouTube, but we put up a video every day anyway. We make money. So like, I want the chargers to work. I'm not incentivized to make them not work. And then really the automaker partnership, that's the point I want to drive home. I think if that's where their main driver of revenue is coming from, which Tom's mentioned on this channel and others, we know that the majority of EA's, profit more or less, if they are running a profit, I don't know. I don't research these things. Come from the automaker partnerships, not from you and me turning up at a station and plugging in. They could care less from a numbers standpoint. on that. That doesn't make a dent in their bank. So I hope the automakers get more involved personally, and not just with EA, but with all of the companies, because ChargePoint, GreenLodge, right. Blink, EVgo, they all have automaker partnerships. They all should be holding charging companies to a higher standard.
Now, yeah. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt and say that there's good people working at all of these companies. There's good people who drive EVs themselves, you know, wouldn't you? And that they want their stuff to work. So when, and Darren Palmer, who is VP at Ford, VP of Global EV Programs, he said they now have a team of people just looking at social media. And that's not a cop out. That's not to say that they're not doing other things, but that is genuinely the quickest feedback loop that they can find for their Ford EV products. So you would presume that all of the charging, you would hope all of the charging networks have something similar. I know they've been following your feed, Kyle. Let's presume they're good people at these companies, that they want it to work. Like, how can we help fix this situation of chargers not working? Now, I don't know if they're actually following your journey and you're live tweeting or not, but
yeah, well, like, we
what
just
can we do?
That. So they are, I think, no one is going... And even though it's really easy to say this, and it's honestly the easiest explanation is to say, oh, they're trying to hamper EV adoption. That's the easiest thing to say. Yeah. I don't believe that. No, I don't think anyone there is actually genuinely trying to make this not work. I think everyone's trying to make it work. At least I want to believe that. Right? Yeah. Okay, so let's just assume, because there's really no hard evidence to say that there's any sabotage or anything like that going on. They're trying to make this work. But what I thought was pretty funny was I went to the station yesterday, the point you brought up earlier, Martin, went to the station in the e-tron, and I was like, look, I brought your own car to your own charger. You know, this car works great in the cold. E-tron's a good cold weather beast.
Ski-tron.
The ski-tron. And just same issue, isolation fault, didn't work at all. And, you know, then as I was backing out of the charger a few minutes later, I noticed the screen go black, and I'm like, whoa, weird, why did it go black? And then they log on and you can see them moving a mouse around trying to adjust settings and different things. So what's funny is I actually went back to that charger. I thought, oh, maybe they're fixing whatever was wrong, like maybe this is how they fix it, but it didn't make any difference. They're probably logging all of the sessions, but of course I record everything at charging stations just to share with my viewers. Everything I do is just my own experience and my own impression, and it should work. And honestly, I can get around. I can make stuff work. I can go to the ABB unit. I can go to the next station down the road that's not one of these new units. The reason I put such an emphasis on this, just to wrap up this story, is just because these new units are being installed across the country. They're replacing older units that were buggy in hot weather and putting these ones in. And again, I did not test any of the new Signet versions of these, only the full BTC versions here. And we know BTC to have plenty of issues in cold weather climates already. So the fact that that was the hardware manufacturer that EA decided to partner with and co-develop with is a bit shocking to me. You know, I would have loved to see them do a partnership with ABB or Signet or something, you know, maybe with that has a bit better cold weather experience, but is what it is.
Yeah. And want to follow up. Martin said, what can you do to improve it? Every time you go to a charging station, regardless of what company it is, enter the file a report through their app and then file it on PlugShare, because all of the companies monitor PlugShare. And I mean, you could tweet it if you want also, but PlugShare hurts them even more because the tweet gets forgotten about in, you know, after the next tweet's posted. But the PlugShare remarks stay there. And some companies like Electrify America in particular, boast that we have the highest rating on PlugShare. Okay, well, maybe not enough people are reporting that there's problems. So report in the app that the station is broken. Let the company know. Even if you've been there six times, just keep doing it. And then also report on PlugShare. If you just keep, I know Kyle shaking his head, is that going to solve everything? No. But Martin asked, what can you do? There's very little you can do, but you can do that, and it can't hurt. And then there's one last thing I want to point out. Somebody just commented, I forget what their name is, Ford or EA can hire Tom and Kyle to not post. It's cheaper than creating a network. No, they can't hire Tom and Kyle not to post, because you know we wouldn't take money from Ford or Electrify America. Well, let me take that back.
Money that we wouldn't have to work anymore.
Yeah, we probably wouldn't take money from Ford or Electrify America. No, let me correct that. As honest and straightforward as we are, everybody's got their price.
Now So two things. No. Firstly, if Pete Buttigieg does want to come on this podcast or Tom's podcast or Carl's podcast, he drives an EV, and I'm sure he knows about issues around charging. But I mean, Pete, you're welcome on any time, and we'll talk about charging anytime. Secondly, anyone, whether it's the federal government, it's a standards agency, EA, any car company, could do a lot worse than saying to Kyle and Tom, don't make YouTube videos for a week. We will give you a Santa's sack full of cash to come in and sit round our table and just tell us what to do. I'm deadly serious about this. You've got two of America's leading experts on how to charge electric vehicles, and this thing is a disaster in cold weather at the minute, and they could do a lot worse than saying, look guys, put down your cameras for a week. Come in, because whoever they've got advising them, if they're just sitting around slapping themselves on the back going, oh, hey, we're doing a great job, aren't we? They're not doing a great job, and they need a reality check, and they could do a lot worse than bringing in people who do this day in, day out, and are not invested in spinning some sort of fairy tale that it's okay, we're working. Things are a disaster this week.
Right. I mean, we can't have this kind of situation ongoing, like once everything gets electrified. I mean, right now we're at like a very small percentage of people who have electric cars who have to rely on them for in this sort of situation.
Even then, they're getting full. I see cars every time I go to the station.
Oh, yeah, now. Sure. Yep. Oh, yeah. But I mean, but we can't have these like the reliability issues like this at any, level more integration of electrification in our system.
Sorry. I know you're about to move on. I just want to bring up this plug share point that Tom brought up really quick. There is a bit of confusion. I don't know the answer to this, but I'm curious what you guys think. When you log a session in plug share, there's only three options. You can leave a comment, which doesn't affect the score. You can say, I wasn't able to charge, and that reduces the score. Mm-hmm. Or you say you charged successfully. There's no intermediary option, which is I tried 9 units and the 10th one worked. Right. And if the 10th one worked, do you then classify that as a successful charge? Because technically it is. And I've always done that. I've always said, hey, successful charge on this particular station. But if only one out of the entire unit is working, that's not a good metric. It's actually improving the plug. What am I trying to say? It improves the score. Thank you.
Leave two comments. Leave a failed to charge. And then 15 minutes later, when you're charging, leave another comment. Okay, moved over and I charged. So now it gets a 50% rating.
And I believe you have to be physically at the location for it to affect the score. So make sure you do it when you're charging.
Yeah. Don't do it later on. And talking about EVgo, I know we got to move off charging. So I found something interesting. You know how we talked when Josh Levy was on about how they named the charging Jonathan. Stations, and Kyle asked him if he could name one in Colorado, Kyle. So Electrifarm, I've been waiting for EVgo to install a 350 kilowatt DC fast charger in New Jersey. They had the highest one was 200 kilowatt, but that was only on an 800 volt system. So I could only pull 80 kilowatts on a 400 volt system. So they just installed a 350 kilowatt charging station 12 miles from my house, and it's called Tom.
No way.
Yes.
And that's a pretty common name. So to me, like, I would have thought that they would have already used that name. Like, how could they have not had a charger that was called Tom?
We have to have a party. It's Tom's charger.
So, yeah, and it's the closest one to my house. I haven't gone there yet, but it's in West Orange. And, that's like 12 or 15 miles from my house. So
I thought that was
pretty cool. So if it's a coincidence, it's a ridiculous coincidence that, in the whole country – the first one they install is the closest charger to my house. So if you did that on purpose, Jonathan, thanks a lot. I think that's pretty cool. I'm going to head over there and charge.
All right.
That is so neat. I love that. That is the cool. You got to have a little party there.
Yeah. Right. I see a little video coming up in the near future. Hey, so to wrap up this, what we've been driving segment. So I just wanted to mention that Kyle, you also had a couple other videos real quick. You did a video. Let me scroll up here. Right, you had a great video about service mode that's now available in Teslas and checking your the battery health of your Tesla Model 3. This is I really enjoy. I watched this whole thing. It was great. So it like drains all the power out of your battery, and then it fills it. You fill it back up again. It takes like a day to do, and you get some deep system level results. And you have a great video on that that people should check out and watch. And you also had a video with Colton, who picked up a second ID4. I think it was his sister or somebody in his family. They picked it up.
No, so it's Alyssa's sister has her ID4, and Colton bought it for his wife. But in the larger out of spec family, right? We're all friends. We all live in the same area. We see each other every day. It's the second ID4 that we got. Yes.
Right, and it's the exact same spec too.
Identical.
Right, and so Colton's great. He took delivery of this car. I believe this is his car. And he told the dealership not to do any of the detailing stuff that they do, you know, take the plastic off. He wanted to do all that kind of stuff himself and examine the paint and everything. And so he's got, you know, another video up there, checking out the ID4, Volkswagen ID4, and checking out the paint. And I guess it's super consistent, like the thickness of it. He was very pleased with that. Mm-hmm. And there's another project car for the detailing and stuff like that. It's a out of spec details channel. Yeah. It's a good looking car, man. I've kind of, it's nice.
ID4 is the jam. The problem is the software, but the car itself, once you not factor in the software, it drives great.
Right.
Good range. I mean, we're all fans here, and if you buy it before the end of the year, you get the full tax credit plus the Colorado state credit. You just can't not go for it for the price. Like, it's so much car for the money.
Actually, maybe there's a little extension on that. Not just the end of the year. I think maybe till March you're going to be able to get that money. But we can talk about that in a second.
Yeah, good transition.
Yeah. But talk about that a second. But first, I wanted to talk about the bigger, bolder 2024 Hyundai Kona Electric.
Can't go out of order, Dom.
That's basically the big news of the week.
Can't go out of order, can you?
I know, I'm still scrolling my notes back and forth here. So this week we had the reveal of the deeply refreshed Hyundai Kona Electric. It's not a complete reveal because we didn't get all the details, but we did see the design, and Hyundai says they will announce more powertrain specs and pricing very soon. So for the 2024 model year, the Kona, which is going to be available in all-electric, hybrid, and straight combustion versions, it's significantly larger and has a lot more up-to-date inside and out. So it's got that LED light stretching across the front hood closure line, and that's an element that they use in the Hyundai Staria, which is like a really cool looking minivan that we don't get here in the US. So it's the whole 5.9 inches longer than the outgoing Kona Electric, which should solve like the really tight backseat issue that the existing Kona has.
If that is all in the rear, then it badly needed. If that whole extension is just rear leg room.
Well, the wheelbase has been stretched by 2.3 inches, so there should be at least some relief there in the back seat.
Yeah,
so
I mean, the front seats go back a long way, but if you do put the front seats back as far as they do, it's like a 2+2. Like, you can't get anybody in the back.
Right, it's like a Mustang. Mustang.
Yeah, the existing one, not the new one, the existing one, yeah. So that was the fix.
Right.
That's what prevented me from buying one. But if you guys remember, I talked about it on the podcast, I was going to get the original Kona, but I have to shuffle my parents around a lot. And once I got in the back, I was like, no, there's no way I could put them back here. And that's when I got my Model 3 because the Kona was got knocked out. So this is great if it does add the legroom that it needed. That other than that, it's a great EV.
It follows the Kia Niro EV refresh, and it sits on the same platform. It's been slightly modified from what they had before, but I believe it's the same platform. But so it should have a very similar powertrain. So we expect, they haven't announced this yet officially, but we expect to see it have a slightly larger battery, 64.8 kilowatt hours, and then the same single 150 kilowatt motor up front. So that gives you like 201 horsepower. So we haven't seen or driven this yet, so we're kind of limited about just talking about the design. But Tom, just quickly, what are your quick impressions about what Hyundai has done here?
I like it. You know, I've always liked the Kona, and I like this new look. I think it improved. The old style looked good too. I think it looks even better. I like the fact that hopefully it'll have more leg room. My only concern is, what's the price delta between that and an Ioniq 5? You know, is there enough separation to need two, you know, EVs so closely, you know, aligned? It's not that much smaller than an Ioniq 5. And it's got to be a deal financially in order to make it worth not getting an Ioniq 5.
Well, the outgoing Hyundai Kona Electric is like 33,000 something. But the Kia Niro, which this is more similar in size, is like 39,000. So, you know, it's going to be cheaper than the Ioniq 5, but it's not going to be as cheap as, like, say, the Bolt, but it's a larger vehicle, I think, than the Bolt as well.
Yeah, it's more upscale than a Bolt too. You know, it's definitely more of a car than the Bolt. And a Bolt I love, but the function is to be, you know, inexpensive transportation, and it works at that. This is definitely a little bit more premium than a Bolt, and you know, as long as, you know, you can get one for, you know, $6,000 or $7,000 less than an Ioniq, then I think that's a big enough price change that a lot of people wouldn't be able to make that extra $6,000 or $7,000 leap and get an Ioniq, and this gives them a good option. But if it's just a few thousand dollars, I mean, if it's $4,000 less, let's say, then I don't know if that's enough separation.
Right. That interior looks pretty nice, though. Like I said, the lighting, the ambient lighting all around, that's pretty sweet. I think it looks like a lot nicer than the outgoing one. Just update, it looks modern. You know, we've kind of moved into this style, or everyone is. We want to move on because we don't have too much time left. So, and this is kind of interesting. So the government guidance we've all been waiting on and had expected before the end of the year has been officially delayed. It's a good thing. So at least if you're like me and you plan on buying an EV built in the U.S. before March. So the U.S. Department of Treasury has put out a press release discussing the progress on various aspects of the implementation of the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA. It says that the department still plans to release information on the anticipated direction of critical mineral and battery component requirements that vehicles must meet to qualify for tax incentives in the Inflation Reduction Act, which automakers can use to identify which vehicles are eligible when the new requirements go into place. But here's the good part. Treasury will issue a notice of proposed rulemaking in March with proposed guidance on the critical minerals and battery components requirements. By statute, the critical mineral and battery components requirements take effect only after Treasury issues that proposed rule. So until that proposed rule comes out between, you know, January 1st and when that happens, the battery mineral source won't be part of the criteria for the rebate, which means that vehicles like the Chevy Bolt EV and EUV, the Ford Mustang Mach-E and F-150 Lightning, at least in the not the highest trim, F-150 Lightning, but anything under $80,000, the Chattanooga-built Volkswagen ID.4. So these should all get the full $7,500 EV credit now until whenever this thing happens in March, right? Kyle, right. Did I miss any cars, or is there something else?
I think you got most of them. Rivian should qualify. Think base ones, maybe. Okay. 80,000 cap. Yeah, especially the early reservation holders that locked in that still haven't taken delivery of things like R1S and others. Pretty sure they all qualify. There's probably many more, but good news. I mean, this is what we talked about on the last show, and we had, a $5 bet, Tom, right? $10 bet, something like that.
About the tax credit?
Yeah, about it. You thinking everyone knows what they need to do, and I'm thinking no one knows what they need to do, and I think you owe me a Starbucks.
It could be. You could be right on that. Well, my point was that the companies all know where their minerals are sourced. They have that all exactly. Yeah. Like, there's no ambiguity. Oh, where did our stuff come from?
Yes.
So that was my point. But yes. You may have a point, though. An attorney might be able to argue your point as winning. So I'll Venmo you enough money for your Starbucks.
It's okay. It's okay. Thank you.
People are saying in the comments, buy your Bolt, or talking to me. I was planning on buying a Chevrolet Bolt EV. So when I read all this, I was so excited. I got on the Chevrolet website. I just or just ordered one to have it sent here so I could get my color. You know, if all else fails, I get a base Bolt TV with a nice black cloth interior, which is fine. And without some of the nannies, you know, the cross traffic back one, it won't have that. It won't have heated seats, but it will have a dual charge cord. That's the only thing I'm springing extra for, the dual 240, 120, whatever. 110.
Really? Yeah. You do it inside EV's podcast. Anyone will send you a million cables for free.
Yeah. I can't accept that kind of thing. I can't accept that kind of thing. But yeah, so, but in my color, I forget, it's like some light blue. It's nice. Anyway, so that's,
aren't you afraid about the black interior in Florida, like being like roasting hot in the summer?
Yeah, there's no choices, right? There's like, it's, this is what you get.
Oh, really? Okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah. When, I haven't, whatever. It'll be fine. Recently.
So how much is it?
I'm not sure. It's like 25 or 26.
Such a freaking
$26,000. And then, but when you put the 7,500, I'll have to wait a year before I can, you know, I still have to take out a loan for like $20,000 or whatever, you know.
Right. Yeah. You'll front the cost, but you'll get it back on your taxes. Yeah.
Right.
Which, so that should be cash on the hood topic for another day.
But it does that it will in 1 year.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
It will do that eventually. Yeah. Unfortunately, this first year of transition, I don't know. Anyway, I'm just excited about this because it really helps put this within my personal like reach range with a bit more of a buffer, a comfort buffer, because yeah, I'm not, you know, super well off.
And what about so Tesla is doing the $7,500 situation on Model 3 LFP. Do you know what that brings the price down to? Because that's cash on the hood. That's right. Boom. Point of sale.
Right. I haven't actually looked at that. I'm not even sure what the cheap LFP Tesla cross for now.
Wonder how close to a Bolt it gets.
Tesla.
Yeah. All right. Research time.
Yeah. This research as we go, because, you know,
somehow I clicked on Model S Plaid. I went Model 3 standard range. Buy now. Oh, who's going to get it first? Wow. What? $59,000 are the ones in inventory.
Yeah. I'm looking at it. It showed me one at $61,000. I mean, if you can afford $61,000 for a car, that's over the $50,000 cap anyway. So it's not eligible.
Yeah, they don't even have any Model 3 standard ranges in my area. So yeah, I think you're still getting the best deal of the century going for a Bolt. You're going to have great range, a very comfortable ride, in my opinion. I actually think it's worth specking up the Bose sound system. I don't know if you can choose that as an own. I know you're a music guy.
I wish I could.
Do they allow you to spec that?
No.
Probably in a package.
I think you have to go to the LT2 for that.
Yeah. Okay, maybe and, not worth
yeah.
it.
Yeah, you know, it's good. It's fine. I'm kind of curious because I've only seen like the nicer Bolts, so I'm kind of curious how unpremium this is going to be. I think it's going to be fine. I don't think it's going to be.
Oh yeah,
I don't think it's going to be bad. And then like in the nice car, that's the color I'm getting. Yes.
Sorry. Oh. So just to confirm, we may have buried the lead here a little bit. You have bought a car.
No, I haven't.
Oh, what?
I ordered the car. I ordered it. I went on the Chevrolet website and I said, give me this car, send it to this dealership. And then maybe today I'll run in and go to the dealership action and talk to them. And, you know,
that's kind of like you bought it. I mean, you ordered it.
Kind of, but it's 2 days before Christmas. They're going to shut down soon. I mean, I know Christmas is a bigger deal here than, you know, the US. You continue to do things like, I don't know, go to work and things. But Europe is currently shut down till the new year. But come on. So this is halfway. You've ordered it and now you go to a dealer and you say, what's the price? Or is the price set in stone?
Well, I'm going to say this is the price that Chevrolet says I should pay for this, and that's how much I'm paying. I'm not going to pay any more.
You should be like,
no.
You should get it for less.
Downturn. You don't want this crappy base Bolt on your lot. I want 7% off a sticker.
Yeah.
And we meet somewhere in the middle.
There's another recall. I'm worried about this.
Yeah, right? There is another recall.
Keep ordering base Bolts to go to your lot every day until you give me the proper price. How much is it to order one?
It's free.
Oh, so just do what? Literally order one every day. They'll just have a lot full of them.
Oh my God. They'll love me down there if I do that, I'm sure.
Great. So go in. Say, I need a discount. We're heading into a recession. The economy's tanking. Double-digit inflation. And so what's the best deal? So that's the conversation.
Yeah, sticker. You can get under sticker now on this.
Easily.
Okay.
I've seen so many stories of 2 months ago, people were paying $2,000 over sticker for their Subaru, and now it's, you know, $500 under. It's a buyer's market now. This is not 3 months ago. The world has changed.
And at the end of the year, it's the best time to buy a car because the dealers are looking to get that unit on, even if you just signed the contract, they're looking to get that unit on that year's sales because they get volume, you know, kickbacks from the OEMs in many, many conditions. The best time is the end of the year. You've got your best negotiating time. And even late in the day, show up an hour before the dealer closes.
Yeah.
They're tired. They've been worn down all day. The manager just wants to get you the hell out of the dealership with a contract signed. Show up an hour before they close at the, you know, December 28th and just, you know, that's the best time to get a deal.
And you don't need any delivery. Be like, look, I already know everything about this car. You don't need to tell me a thing. Oh, don't even freaking wash it. I'll run it through a car wash. I just want the car and I'll get out of your hell. You'll be the easiest customer they'll ever have.
Right. So, okay. So don't look too anxious or too hungry when I go in there. Be just like, oh, nonchalant, blasé. Like,
you want to sell me this car.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Tell me this car, but you know, yeah. Make me want this car because I don't really want it. But anyway.
Wow. So we are going to be here next week because we're going to do a preview show of all the cars coming out. Not all, but you know, a preview of 2023. And so you've got a week now, Dom. And this time next week, we want to hear that story.
Okay. I mean, well, I can't buy it until after New Year because that's when it's eligible for all the big rebate things. So
this year?
The transaction has to happen after the first.
Oh.
But how does Chattanooga ID4 get it this year?
Because it didn't have Chevrolet had sold. It's still the 200,000 unit cap. It was left on until the end of the year.
Forget everything we just said. It don't even play. Don't waste anyone's time now.
Sorry?
Yeah, forget everything you said. It doesn't apply. No one's going to want to negotiate on next year's pricing.
I mean, okay. Oh, the negotiation part. I mean, I don't know. We'll see. I don't think they're going to really. I think they're going to have like a fair amount of people looking for Chevy Bolts. I don't know. I think word's going to get out that there's a really, really good deal happening right here.
So many people have been buying them here locally. I've recommended them to a bunch of people because, we have a pretty good dealer in town. They had a bunch in stock. They're all gone now.
Right. Yeah, I want to get down and just assess out the situation and see what's going on. I've already made contact with one salesperson because he got on we have a local Facebook group of sustainable car people.
Oh, great.
And he took the initiative to get in there and introduce himself and talk about the cars a little bit. So
cool. So just work with him then. That sounds great.
That's what I'm going to do. So before we go, we need to mention this. So we talked a few weeks about this car, the Buick Electra E5. It was showed up on a government website, Chinese government website, in some monochromatic images, but now it's officially debuted. So this is the Chinese version of the car. It comes in front wheel drive with 180 kilowatts, 241 horsepower. It still could get all wheel drive at some point, but so it's likely coming to the US as well. So we wanted to show it off. Though when it's here, it will have Ultium cells. In China, it's going to use cells from the SAIC CATL joint venture. We don't know the pack size yet or the range. Size-wise, it's like 192.6 inches long, so it's 2 inches longer than an Equinox EV and about 4 inches shorter than the Cadillac Lyriq. So it's also 2 inches narrower than the Lyriq and 1.2 inches taller, so it's an interesting dimensions there. So we don't need to spend a whole lot of time on this at all, but does anyone have anything they want to say about the Buick Electra E5? Tom, you look...
Well, exterior styling, I like. I think it looks nice. You know, yeah. I mean, we don't know a ton more about it. I like the old, like, Kona headlight styling.
It's true, right?
Kind of reminded me, my first impression was a mixture between the old Kona and the XPeng G3i. Kind of like a mashing those two together, but I think it looks good.
Okay, you see the North American buyers will accept
I think so.
This.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And U.S. Buick U.S. dealers are going to have to invest to like $300,000-$400,000 if they want to sell an EV. So I'm not even sure how available, or we have to wait to see what kind of uptake the dealerships are going to.
It's a hard sell, Dom, because, you know, Buick is their customer base are older customers. And the older customers are, I think, a little bit more apprehensive with buying electric vehicles. So, you know, that's in itself a bit of a conundrum for Buick. You know, that this is going to appeal to younger buyers, but Buick isn't a younger buyer brand at this point. So can they reinvent themselves and have, will that, will this, you know, invigorate the brand? You know, that's, you know, to be seen.
It sounds like a marketing problem, a challenge.
No, I think it is a challenge.
Yeah. Brandon Flash says it looks very similar to the Honda Prologue, which is the also on the Ultium system. And it, you know, it could be this like similar size to that too. We'll have to see what the dimensions are, but I think the stylings are going to be very different from brand to brand. It's not going to be just like in the old days, we just stick a Plymouth, you know, logo on this car and a Dodge logo on this, the same car. And yep, it's like, here you go. Right. Here's some bold new graphics to, you know, differentiate the brands. Anyway, I think, what's our time? I don't know. Anything else we want to talk about this week? The Porsche Taycan onboard charger, you can get retrofitted. It's going to have you can get like 19.2 or 5 kilowatts
80 amp
onboard charging for like a couple grand, but that also activates your plug-in charge for the 2020 model year Taycan. So that's an interesting little bit of news.
Big news, actually, because a lot of early Taycan owners felt left out with the updates that the cars got plug-in charge. I've also heard quite a few people reach out just recently for some reason that Taycan app has been a little bit buggy and plug-in charge isn't seemingly working so great. I should play around. I want to play around with the new GTS version. So maybe early in the year, I'll pick one of those up to borrow for a week and we'll play around, see if plug-in charge works on it.
Right. The GTS, that sounds pretty fun. In the Sport Turismo?
So I think it would be a sedan. I don't think we have any Sport Turismo media cars yet. I got to ask Calvin.
Right. So you haven't, have you driven the Sport?
One I have on order, I haven't driven.
Oh, that's true. You have one.
And so I'm really excited to see what it's like.
Right. Okay. Well, while we do that, I guess we should, take a break for a week. And
next week,
Tesla, can we just, I think we mentioned it, right? The $7,500 thing plus 10,000 miles of supercharging, big news.
Right. If you don't want to wait until the new year, you can still get that same savings that you're going to get after January.
Even better if you lease, though, because I'm pretty sure that $7,500 comes off your cap cost reduction and not off the total amount of the vehicle. So that's like a $7,500 down payment right on your lease.
Okay.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's my understanding.
Some great deals.
I don't know if they adjusted the residual value or adjusted the money factor, the interest on that to compensate, but you used to be able to get some insane Tesla deals. I leased a P100D years ago for like no money because it had like a $60,000 price adjustment and it just went straight on the lease. It was like almost a free P100D. It was amazing. You can't find those anymore, but I think this goes right on your cap cost.
We're seeing the same thing over here with some decent business contract hire, which is like a lease. You give it back at the end for Model Y, standard Model Y, which is like £400 or something. And it's that, you know,
is that rear-wheel drive, that car?
Yeah.
Oh, we don't get that car here.
Yeah. So that is 250 miles of range odd. Look, that is all the car you need. It's a bit stiff if you're just going to be pootling around town doing chores, but it gets you in a Model Y for if it's a business contract hire. Personal leasing is even higher, so they must have Tesla UK must have a ton of these right-hand drive rear-wheel drive Model Ys from China just sitting in inventory, and so they've just really lowered the monthly price. Those deals are out there. We're not getting the same $7,500 off that you are. We're getting free supercharging. There is a big, big push. If you've been contemplating getting a Tesla, there is a big end of year push from the two people I know at Tesla. They do have internal targets. So even though they don't have salespeople, you know, you can't walk into and help someone hit their salesperson target because you buy them online, but they do have internal targets, of which I think it's fair to say they've not particularly hit very well. So there are, you can't get a deal As in, you can't talk them down on a price, but if you have been holding off, then, you know, you could be in luck.
Marc-André Ravioli. I'm not sure if Ravioli is his real last name. But anyway, in Quebec, he says a rear-wheel drive Model 3 costs $35,000 USD with government incentives. And yeah,
pretty good.
I think Tesla is offering a $5,000 rebate to in Canada, which would make that...
It's a great deal.
If that's really how it would all work out. I don't know if anyone can give us an update there in the comments.
There's also plenty of used Teslas. We've noticed the market really sinking. Yeah.
I mean, some of those are pretty tempting. I was looking at those.
That would be the move.
I don't know. It's like, I like the idea of like 0 miles.
Right? But it's an electric car. You can't hurt them. I mean, yeah, someone else farted in it, but like just put it
right. Yeah, like, I mean, I don't really care about that so much.
Kyle, he just placed an order for a car. Please
I won't confuse him.
No,
sidetrack him.
No, literally, everyone just like it's just don't move. This is like the end of the Italian Job where the bus is hanging over the cliff. No one move. Just don't. So, Dom's bought a car. No one move.
So that brings us to the end of our show.
Merry Christmas, everybody. Yes. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Y'all have a wonderful holiday season. And we'll be here again next week on next Friday morning, and we'll talk about the cars coming in 2023, I think, and maybe a little bit about some news. I'm not sure if there's going to be a whole lot of news this week. But so if you have any questions or comments about this show, you can leave them on the Inside EVs Forum podcast thread or on our YouTube or Twitch comment sections. If you like the show, please give us a thumbs up. If you're watching us on YouTube, we love those thumbs up. Thank you. Don't forget, you can find and follow our panelists on Twitter. Follow Tom Malogny at Tomolog. That's with two M's. Martin Lee is at EV News Daily. Kyle Connor is at It's Kyle Connor. And click subscribe and tap that bell icon for notifications. And thank you all for joining us. And we'll see you all again next week. Ciao.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See TNCs 21+. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.